Contentment does not mean that you are indifferent to your circumstances. It does not mean that you give up on trying to make things better. Contentment is not kind of throwing up your hands and saying, well, whatever will be, will be. That's fatalism or stoicism, and that has nothing to do with Christianity.
Welcome to Open the Bible with Pastor Colin Smith. And Colin, I'm glad to know that contentment does not mean that we have to just accept whatever comes our way with a big smile on our face. What does contentment actually mean?
Well, it means that our happiness, our peace, our contentment is not actually dependent upon the circumstances of our lives. Paul says, now I've been at the best, I've been to the top, and I've been to the worst, I've been to the bottom, but I have learned in all circumstances to be content. That's a marvelous thing to be able to say, because it means that my own inner peace, my own contentment does not depend on what happens around me, which is changing all the time. I've found a deeper and a better basis for it. And of course, it's the knowledge of who he is in Jesus Christ that is that basis of contentment. So this is something really, really important.
Yeah.
Often in life, we'll say, I want to try and make my circumstances better, different. I want to change them for the better. Yeah, that's good. But you don't want to be in a situation in which your happiness depends upon the circumstances of your life.
So we're going to look at this a little more deeply in today's broadcast. I hope you'll open your Bible, join us in Philippians chapter 4. As we continue the message, Learning to Be Content. Here is Pastor Colin.
I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Now, notice how Paul connects this secret of contentment in verse 12 with the strength that he receives from Christ in verse 13. Verse 12, I have learned the secret. Okay, Paul, I hope you're going to tell us what it is. What is the secret? He tells us, verse 13. Here it is. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. So the secret of contentment is the sufficiency of Christ. The secret of contentment is the sufficiency of Christ. Now, it's very fascinating that there is another place where Paul also gives us personal testimony that arises obviously from his own experience, and he says in that other place exactly the same thing. The other place is 2 Corinthians in chapter 12, and that's the passage where in verse 7, Paul speaks about a thorn in the flesh. He doesn't tell us what it was, but something painful was in his life. It was always there, couldn't get away from it, and Satan used it to get at him. And he tells us specifically, three times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me. Now here we come to something very important about contentment that needs to be said in this series. Contentment does not mean that you are indifferent to your circumstances. It does not mean that you give up on trying to make things better. Contentment is not kind of throwing up your hands and saying, well, whatever will be, will be. That's fatalism or stoicism, and that is nothing to do with Christianity. Karl Marx said that religion, by which he meant Christianity, he said it is the opium of the people. And his critique of Christianity was basically this: that if you tell people to be content, you actually take away any incentive or motive to improve their position. And there are many people who would bring this charge against the faith even today, people who think that the Christian gospel is actually in itself a hindrance to human progress, and that it sort of is a drag on the world getting better, and that it is in effect a kind of dope that is put on or in the people. Now, how are you going to answer that when you come up against that objection? And the answer is that Christian contentment, which we are pursuing, does not mean that you are indifferent to your circumstances. And I think we have a marvelous illustration of that in Paul's thorn on the flesh. He doesn't say, hey, I got a thorn on the flesh. Just got to live with it. He really wanted that thing to be changed. He really wanted it to be gone. And he threw everything that he knew at trying to change that thing in his life. He pleaded with the Lord. And when he pleaded with the Lord three times, which I assume means that three separate occasions in his life, he gave himself to sustained prayer and fasting. Oh, God, change this in my life. He threw everything he knew at trying to change the thing that was very, very painful in his life. So Christian contentment does not mean just passively kind of looking at whatever is and saying, what will be, will be. Jerry Bridges, making the same point, points to 1 Corinthians 7:21, which I think is helpful on this, where Paul is talking to someone who is a bondservant. And he says this, "Were you a bondservant when called? Do not be concerned about it, but if you can gain your freedom, avail yourself of the opportunity." So Paul does not say, well, you know, whatever it is, just accept it. That's not what's being said. He's saying, no, if you can change a difficult position for the better, do it by all means. Is there something that you can do that will make a difference? Go for it. Do all that you can to make your life better. Contentment does not mean that you are indifferent to your circumstances. It does mean that you are not controlled by your circumstances. And that's what Paul is saying. I know how to abound, but my joy and my peace doesn't depend on me abounding. It comes from a deeper place. If your joy and your peace depends on your abounding, if your joy and your peace depends on certain things being in place in your life, then it is on a very shaky foundation indeed. Paul says, my joy, my peace do not depend upon my circumstances. They have a deeper foundation. They have a deeper root than that. Now, Paul gave himself to do all that he could in relation to this thorn in the flesh. And you remember what happened. God answered his prayer, and remember what the answer was. He said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, and my power is made perfect in weakness. In other words, Paul says, when I agonized over this most difficult thing in my life, here's the answer that I got. The secret of contentment is the sufficiency of Christ. That's the point of 2 Corinthians chapter 12, and it's exactly the same point that he comes back to in Philippians in chapter 4. How am I able to be content even in the worst of circumstances? Because I can do all things through Jesus Christ, who gives me strength. The secret of contentment is the sufficiency of Jesus Christ. And Paul is saying, here's my testimony. That's actually how I learned to live with that most difficult thing, the thorn in the flesh. I did discover the sufficiency of Jesus even there. And this is the secret, therefore, that I have for anything in life. I know this now. I've learned this now. I've proved this now, and I'm telling you because you can prove it too. Now, I want you to notice this wonderful thing. Christ gives me strength. So what Paul is describing here from his own experience is an infusion of strength that comes from Christ into the life of a believer that matches the load that he gives you to carry at any particular point in time. Jeremiah Burroughs has this wonderful phrase. He says, God can double your load and triple your strength. I like that. Oh God, if you're going to double my load, please triple my strength. But you see, he's got this point. There's an infusion of strength that comes in relation to the load. That's why I'm confident. That's why I'm contented, Paul is saying, because whatever happens, and I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but I do know that Christ gives me strength. I've proved it already, and therefore I'm confident with regards to it. That's why I'm not worrying about the future. It's wonderful. Christ gives me strength. We said that contentment is a journey, and it includes the journey from anxiety to trust. Here's that journey right here. What is anxiety? What is worry? Anxiety is anticipating a problem without the strength that Jesus Christ will give you to meet it. Here's how this works, you see. A friend is diagnosed with a serious illness, and putting yourself in their shoes, you say, "I don't think I could handle that." Now, what are you doing? You're putting yourself in that situation and trying to picture yourself in that situation without the strength that Jesus Christ would give you if you were in that situation. That's how worry spirals, you see. That's what anxiety is. It's putting yourself into a situation. It is anticipating a problem without the strength that Jesus Christ would give you, will give you in any circumstance to meet it. You begin to notice the burdens that other people have. And you say to yourself, well, now what would I do if that happened to me? And when you do that, you're anticipating the problem, but without the strength that Jesus Christ would, will give to you if you were in that circumstance of life. That's what worry is. And here, therefore, is how you move from anxiety to trust. You confidently affirm, as Paul does here, the sufficiency of Christ. Christ gives me strength. He will give me the strength that I need for whatever I have to face, and he will do it at precisely the right time, just when I need it. Not before, and not after. He will infuse his strength into me according to the trial that I may face when the time comes.
You're listening to Open the Bible with Pastor Colin Smith and a message called Learning to Be Content, part of our series, The Art of Contentment. And we're going to pause here, but we'll get back to the message in just a moment. If you ever miss a broadcast in the series, you can listen online. Our website is openthebible.org. You can stream the program or download an MP3 for free. You can also listen on the go if you have the Open the Bible app. It's a great way to listen on demand whenever it fits your schedule. You'll find the app for free at your app store or, again, listen online at openthebible.org. Back to the message. Here's Pastor Colin.
Now, some of you will know this story. It's an old story. It's a very beautiful one. Corrie ten Boom, in her wonderful book, The Hiding Place. And she tells the story of how, as a young girl, she had gone to some family friends, and there had been a death in this family. And so, as a young girl, she was brought literally face to face with death, and it quite terrified her. And particularly, what scared her was the thought, what if my father, on whom I depend, what if my dad were to die? And this got into her mind. And she describes how that night, she's in bed, her father comes in to tuck her in and to pray with her and all of that. And she says this, "That night, as my father stepped through the door, I burst into tears. I need you, I sobbed." Can you picture this little girl saying to her dad, "I need you. You can't die, you can't." "My father sat down on the edge of the narrow bed. Corrie," he began gently, "when you and I go to Amsterdam, when do I give you your ticket?" I sniffed a few times considering this. "Why, just before we get on the train." "Exactly," he said. "And our wise Father in heaven knows when we're going to need things too. Don't run ahead of him, Corrie. When the time comes that some of us have to die, you will look into your heart and find the strength that you need. Just in time." If God had told you in advance everything you would ever face in your life, you would be completely and utterly overwhelmed. Thank God he does not do that. What he does is he walks with his children one step at a time, and at each point in the journey, he will give to you the strength that you need, and he'll give it to you at precisely the right time. Corrie, when does your dad give you the ticket? Just when you get on the train. Whatever Jesus Christ calls you to do now, and whatever he may call you to endure and to go through in the future, you can do it by his grace because he will give you strength. And Paul says, I've proved this in my life. I've been at the top and I've been at the bottom. And all over this congregation, there are testimonies of the truth of this. Where among us, there are folks who have endured situations we never imagined we would in our lives. And if we'd known in advance, we would have said, I could never survive. And yet by God's grace, you have been given strength. And through the tears and through the sorrow, he has held you up. And you have proved and you have experienced exactly what the Apostle Paul is describing for all of us here. So friends, here is the Christian answer to anxiety. Jesus Christ will give you the strength that you need to face whatever he calls you to face, and he will give you this strength. He will infuse it into you at just the right time, just when you need it. Now, how are we going to learn then to be content? Well, in this way, by gratefully savoring all the blessings of Christ, bringing them to mind regularly and nourishing our hearts and our minds on all the ways in which his goodness has been showered upon us in Jesus Christ. And then confidently affirming the sufficiency of Christ, that in him is all that we need. The secret of contentment is the sufficiency of Jesus Christ. And then here's the last thing. We must gladly embrace the supremacy of Christ. If you want to know more of this contentment, here really is the step that you must take today. Martin Lloyd-Jones said, I think very perceptively on this subject, if we want to feel as Paul felt, we must live as Paul lived. And we look at his experience of strength being infused into him. We look at the contentment that he gained at the best and the worst circumstances of life. We want that. If we want to feel as Paul felt, we must live as Paul lived. And how did Paul live? Well, he tells us in this same letter, for me to live, help me with it, for me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Now just think about that in these last moments here this morning. Could you say that? Would it be true that you are living as the Apostle Paul lived? For me to live is Christ and to die is gain. Think about this with me. How would you complete this sentence? I like to think of it with two blanks in there. For me to live is blank and to die is blank. What you put in the second blank depends entirely on what you put in the first blank. For me to live is family. For me to live is business. For me to live is ministry. For me to live is sport, music. Whatever you put in there, whatever you put, whichever of these you put in the first blank, there is only one word that could go in the second blank, and that is the word loss. If for you to live is work, or family, or business, or sport, or music, or even ministry, then to die is always lost because it is the end of the thing for which you have lived. But if you can say, for me to live is Christ, then in the second blank you can truly say to die is gain because when you die you get more of the one you have lived for. And this is why when Paul was in prison, he was in prison when he wrote this about contentment, which is one of the most striking things about this letter of Philippians. He's facing the possibility even of a violent death. And he says, now even if that should happen, this is chapter 2 and verse 17, I am glad and rejoice with you all. Paul, how could you be content in the light of that? He says, well, because I'm living for Christ, and so even if I die, that's only going to be gain for me. You want to feel what Paul felt? You've got to live as Paul lived. For me to live is Christ. This Christ gives me strength. And that is why I have learned to be content, because whatever happens, he is enough for me. Friends, how sad it would be if for someone, for some family in this congregation, How sad it would be if your joy, your peace, depended on holding on to something that you have or gaining something that you do not have. How free, how confident, how happy you would be if you could truly say with the Apostle Paul, I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. So the first step on the road to contentment is to yield your life to Jesus Christ without condition and without reservation. The first step on the road to contentment, the first step out of the hellish sin of discontent, is to yield your life to Jesus Christ without condition and without reservation. And those who lose everything for him find that they gain everything in him. And when you can gratefully savor the blessings of Christ, and you can confidently affirm the sufficiency of Christ, and you are gladly embracing the supremacy of Christ, then you will be able to say with the Apostle Paul, I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content, because I can do all things through Jesus Christ, who gives me strength.
You're listening to Open the Bible with Pastor Colin Smith, and what a great truth for us to be thinking about as we wrap up today's broadcast. The first step on the road to contentment is to yield your life to Jesus Christ without condition or reservation. You know, we often think of yielding our life to Christ when we begin a personal relationship with Christ, but maybe you've never done that, but you'd like to begin a relationship with Jesus. I hope you'll call us and talk to one of our staff members. Our number is 1-877-OPEN-365. And for those of us who are believers, it's still important for us to continue to yield our lives to Christ daily without reservation. Maybe you'd like to get a copy of this series to listen to again to remind you of these truths. Ask about the Art of Contentment when you call 1-877-OPEN-365, or you'll find ordering information online at openthebible.org. Well, Open the Bible is listener-supported, and as you give a gift of any amount this month, we want to offer you a copy of Tim Keller's book, The Prodigal God. And Colin, I got to tell you, when I hear the title like that, it kind of catches me off guard just a little bit.
It's a really provocative and I think brilliant title. The book, of course, is about the story of the prodigal son, the best-known story, I think, that our Lord Jesus ever told. But the title, The Prodigal God, you think, what can that possibly mean? The son went off the rails. That's not true about God. But right at the beginning of the book, there's a definition of the word prodigal. Prodigal means relentlessly extravagant or having spent everything. And you see, that's a description of God, relentlessly extravagant in his grace, spending everything for us and sending his own son to deliver us from the state that we're in. And what this story does, it does much more than tell the story of two sons, one who went away and the other who stayed at home. It focuses on the sheer glory and wonder of the extravagant grace of God that is poured out for every person, whether that person be someone who's pursuing a model life or whether it be someone who's pursued a rebellious life. The grace of God in all of its beauty and all of its extravagance is extended towards us. Steve, I couldn't put this book down. It's beautifully written. It's absolutely compelling, and it is full of the grace of God.
Well, we want to send you a copy of this book, The Prodigal God, as our way of saying thank you for your financial support this month. You can give online at openthebible.org or when you call 1-877-OPEN-365. And if you've never given a gift to Open the Bible before, this would be a great time to give, because not only will we send you a copy of this book, The Prodigal God, but thanks to the generosity of a supporter, we're able to take your first-time donation and double it this month. You can give online at openthebible.org or when you call 1-877-673-6365. For Pastor Colin Smith, I'm Steve Hiller. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us next time. This program is a listener-supported production of Open the Bible.
At Open the Bible, we're grateful for like-minded organizations committed to sharing the gospel around the world. And to that end, I'd like to commend the work of Global Fingerprints. You know, in the book of James, God calls us to help orphans in their distress. That's a clear command, but it's not always clear how we should obey it. And this is where Global Fingerprints comes in. Through Global Fingerprints, you can sponsor a vulnerable child to help meet their physical needs and ensure they hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. I want to commend Global Fingerprints to you. They're focused on equipping the local church to care for children, and where there is no church, they help to plant one. If you'd like to help a vulnerable child, you can find more information on Global Fingerprints at our website, openthebible.org/GF. That's openthebible.org/GF.